Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 13, entitled Dhritarashtra Quits Home, Text Number 3 and also 4. Tam bandhu agatam drishtva, dharma putra sahanujaha, Dhritarashtra yutsascha, Sutta Saratpata Prita. That's text 44. Gandhari Draupadi Brahman Subhadra Chattara Kripe Anyascha Jamaya Pandur Gyataya Shashuta Astriya. Translation. When they saw Vidura return to the palace, all the inhabitants, Maharaj Yudhisthira, his younger brothers, Dhritarashtra, Satyaki, Sanjaya, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, many other wives of the Kauravas, and other ladies with children, all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. It's a long purport, I think. It may take more than one day for something like that. Purport. Gandhari, the ideal chaste lady in the history of the world. She was the daughter of Maharaj Subal, the king of Gandhara, now Kandahar, in Kabul. In her maiden state she worshipped Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is generally worshipped by Hindu maidens to get a good husband. Gandhari satisfied Lord Shiva, and by his benediction to obtain 100 sons, she was betrothed to Dhritarashtra, despite his being blind forever. When Gandhari came to know that her would-be husband was a blind man, to follow her life companions, he decided to become voluntarily blind. So she wrapped up her eyes with many silken linings, and she was married to Dhritarashtra under the guidance of her elder brother Sakuni. She was the most beautiful girl of her time, and she was equally qualified by her womanly qualities, which endeared every member of the Gaurava court. But despite all the good qualities, she had the natural frailties of a woman, and she was envious of Kunti when the latter gave birth to a male child. Both the queens were pregnant, but Kunti first gave birth to a male child. Thus, Gandhari became angry and gave a blow to her own abdomen. As a result, she gave birth to a lump of flesh only. But since she was a devotee of Vyasadev, by the instruction of Vyasadev, the lump was divided into 100 parts, and each part gradually developed to become a male child. Thus, her ambition to become the mother of 100 sons was fulfilled, and she became to nourish. She began to nourish all the children according to her exalted position. When the intrigue of the Battle of Kurukshetra was going on, she was not in favor of fighting with the Pandavas. Rather, she blamed Dhritarashtra, her husband, for such a fratricidal war. She desired that the state be divided in two parts, for the sons of Pandu and her own. She was very affected when all her sons died in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and she wanted to curse Bhimasena and Yudhisthira, but she was checked by Vyasadeva. Her mourning over the death of Duryodhana and Dushasana before Lord Krishna was very pitiful, and Lord Krishna pacified her by transcendental messages. She was equally aggrieved on the death of Karna, and she described to Lord Krishna the lamentation of Karna's wife. She was pacified by Srila Vyasadeva when he showed her dead sons, then promoted to the heavenly kingdoms. She died along with her husband in the jungles of the Himalayas, near the mouth of the Ganges. She burned in a forest fire. Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the death ceremony of his uncle and aunt. And it's a long purport describing various of the personalities that are mentioned here. Let's see how far we get. The whole Mahabharata. All at once. translation again. When they saw Vidura return to the palace, all the inhabitants, and then a long list, all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. Although Vidura was a Dasiputra, the son of a maidservant, as was a customary practice, that when a king was getting married, and a suitable princess, a suitable match was found, that a dowry was given along with that princess, and that part of that dowry was that there would be many maidservants who would be accompanying the queen, who would be friends of the queen, and elephants and many, many other assets, gold, beautiful clothes, and many gifts of that nature would be given. However, the maidservants were not only accompanying the queen, they were also company to the king, who then sometimes would have intimate relationships with these ladies also, and even conceive children with them. Such children were welcomed in the royal court. They were not considered like undesirable or... I can translate. Usually I can say it, but my mental faculties don't work. So those who are not legally conceived are those who in our modern world are outcast, right? They are forbidden, they are kind of ignored, as if they're not there. But that was not the case in the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture was accommodating them, and kings were allowed to have such children, and the court would accept. It was not at all something to be ashamed of, or something socially detestable. Still, according to status, of course, such children were not on the same level as the children that were actually born in the royal family. Such children had no claim to the throne, first of all. They had no claim to royalty, but they were living in royal opulence and so on. So Vidura was such a son, such a person, a Dasiputra. So therefore, it's quite amazing that the whole palace was just coming back to life when he returned. It'd been a long time. It is somewhere mentioned that the pilgrimage of Vidura lasted 30 years. We're seeing here the residents of the palace coming after such a long time. All hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. So we can see that what is going on is due to Vidura's transcendental nature. It was going beyond ordinary mundane relationships. Because Vidura was a saintly person, Vidura had had so many wonderful qualities, and therefore had treated everyone with so much care and wisdom that everyone appreciated him. To Dhritarashtra, Vidura was his brother, undoubtedly. His brother who was extremely wise, and Dhritarashtra knew it. And Dhritarashtra very much valued his judgment. He relied on him. So Dhritarashtra was very happy from the heart. The Pandavas were always favored by him. He was always somehow or other favoring them this way or that way. And therefore, yes, the Pandavas, they felt especially affectionate towards him. But everyone in the palace, all these personalities mentioned here, Satyaki, Sanjaya, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, everyone in the palace was very excited and delighted because Vidura was a pure devotee. Of course, we find in the prayers in the Sat Goswami Astaka, Dira Dira Priyatano Priyakaro, that the six Goswamis, they were dear to both the gentle and the ruffians. They were dear to all, somehow or other. And we see that everyone can recognize saintliness and appreciate. Even we see that Narada Muni is such a person. He goes sometimes before the demons, sometimes before the devotees. And he's respected by all. Vidura was very fortunate because it is said that at the time when Krishna was sent as a messenger, when Krishna went for a final attempt to make peace before the battle of Kurukshetra, at that time Krishna went from Hastinapur to Indraprastha. And he went there to, as he was on the way, the news spread fast, Krishna is coming. So they decided to give him the best possible place to stay. So all Dhritarashtra's sons, Dushasana had the best palace of all, even better than Duryodhana. It was so opulent. So they made arrangements for him to stay there. And then they cooked this wonderful, wonderful meal, really like first class meal. And then Duryodhana and all the others, they came out of the palace to receive Krishna. And they received him like very, very nicely and with sweet words. And they asked him to please come and stay in that palace and to please take lunch. And Krishna said, no, I will not eat. I will never eat in your house. And it's like, Duryodhana's a little shocked. He says, like, but you know, like, why not? He said, no, I will not. And then Duryodhana said, yes, no. He immediately became envious. So he said, not only the Pandavas are your relatives, we are your relatives also. Yeah? So, you know, you can eat in our house. And Krishna said, I'll never eat in the house of anyone who is envious of the Pandavas. And then Krishna left and he went to the house of Vidura, who was not wealthy, who did not live in wealthy conditions as a saintly person. He did not live in a huge palace, relatively simple home. And Vidura had not counted on Krishna coming to his house, so there was nothing, they hadn't cooked anything. So all he had was some bananas. But then somehow or other, he became so ecstatic that Krishna was there that he put the peels on the plate instead and threw the bananas away and served Krishna the peels. And Krishna never complained. He happily ate the peels. Right? Of course, it's a famous story, but that's a nice story, right? That Krishna just sat there eating those peels and very happily, right? And accepting Vidura's offering, and only after a while Vidura realized what he had done. It's like, oh no, I've given him the peel. Krishna was very nice. So in this way, Vidura had also purchased Krishna by his unalloyed pure devotional service. So this is the nature of the pure devotee who purchases Krishna. Then he can touch the heart of all those who are innocent, but not the dvisatsu. The dvisatsu are those who are envious. Those who are envious, they will even turn against the devotee of the Lord. We see that both Karna and Duryodhana were envious. Later in the Mahabharata, it is explained. Well, at one point, Karna suggests to Duryodhana. This is when after 12 years that the Pandavas had been banned to the forest. So after 12 years, they were quite established in opulence and so on, living in great royalty. And then at this time, Karna had a fantastic idea. Let's go and show off our wealth to the Pandavas. I happen to have some information where they might be staying in the forest, and let's just go there with a huge army and opulence and just show off. So that was a great idea. So Duryodhana immediately liked it. So they arranged everything, you know, big opulent army. He even took all his queens on elephants decked out at, like, you know, really nice. And they went to that area, but they passed by a lake, and suddenly this Gandharva appears from this lake, and this Gandharva said, "Stop. Stop. Who are you?" Duryodhana, you know, like the ruler of the Kurus and this and that, you know. And the Gandharva said, "You cannot pass by here." So, you know, like, just, this is property of the Gandharva, of the Gandharvas. So, you know, Duryodhana, this is one Gandharva, and he comes with a huge army. So he says, like, you know, "Look, get out of my way." Yeah. So it turns into a huge fight, and in due course of time, there's a whole army of Gandharvas fighting with Duryodhana's army, and Gandharvas are Gandharvas, they're extremely powerful, so at one point even Karna had to run for his life, and it was just like, they were losing, and Duryodhana became arrested. So the Pandavas heard about it, so Bhima goes, "Great, great. Well done, you know, like, saves us a lot of trouble here." And the others are going, "Yeah, well, look at that, you know. Fate has turned into our favor." And then Yudhisthira goes, "No." And they all look at him, "No." And Yudhisthira says, "For the world." He says, Amongst us, amongst us, there may be Kurus and Pandavas, but when it comes to the world, we are also Kurus. We are all one family. And when a member of our family is attacked, we have to go and save him. And Bhima looks at him like, save Duryodhana? Has he lost it? Has he just like, has Yudhisthira gone mad? And the other Pandavas are also looking, no, it's not true. We are not hearing this. So finally Yudhisthira says it again, no, it is our duty. It is it's duty again. Everyone's shaking their head. Duty again. It is our duty to go and save. To go and save Duryodhana. And then they have to go save Duryodhana. And it happens to be so that Yudhisthira is engaged in some sacrifice at the time, and therefore he couldn't go. So the others who didn't have a desire to save Duryodhana, they had to go out of duty. And they went. Anyway, big fight with the Gandharvas, and when Arjuna entered into the fight and the other Pandavas entered into the fight, the Gandharvas actually had a hard time, and they decided to retreat and at one point take Duryodhana and disappear into the sky. Then Arjuna, with arrows, made a net in the sky, and they just couldn't get through. So they were forced, and then he arrested them. And he was ready to kill these Gandharvas. And then the Gandharvas said, but we only did it on the order of Indra to cut down the pride of Duryodhana. Arjuna didn't care. He stood there with his arrow, ready to kill, said, release Duryodhana right now. Okay. Here he is. Anyway, Gandharvas went off and Duryodhana released. So, you know, Duryodhana, that was too much for him. You know, that was like just too much for his mind. He got saved by the Pandavas. He owed his life to the Pandavas, of all, to the Pandavas, you know. So looking, he couldn't look them in the eyes. He looked at the ground and he sort of said to them, he growled at them, okay, what benediction, what do you want? Yeah, because it was etiquette that if someone saved your life, you had to offer something in exchange. Okay, what is it? Arjuna said, I'll take that boon later. So he did. That's when Bhishma had the five arrows to kill and kept them. Then he used that. But anyway, so then Duryodhana, never looking at the Pandavas, walked away all by himself, leaving the army, went alone into the forest and sat down and decided to give up his life. And he was fasting and meditating and looking down at the ground and just like... Then as he was fasting for a number of days, he had a vision. And he saw all the demons, the Daityas. And the Daityas, they said, oh, Duryodhana, we have done a great sacrifice, a great puja to defeat the Devas. And you are the result of that puja. How can you give up now? Know that we are with you. Know that we are behind you. Know that all our austerities are with you. You will be successful. And know that Karna was previously Narakasura, none other than Narakasura himself, who has appeared to assist you. So we can see that like both these personalities, Karna and Duryodhana, had a deep inherent envy within them, which was not just born within that situation. That they particularly appeared for that purpose, driven by envy, to destroy the divine qualities, the devas. And that the devas, right, had sent their sons, right, their sons to this world, you know, to act as the instruments of Krishna, to establish the principles of Dharma. And that the demoniac forces, right, were striking there and embodied in Duryodhana and in Karna. So although sometimes, especially Karna, you know, sometimes it may seem that Karna was not treated always appropriately, because Karna, after all, was given up by his mother at birth, because she used the mantra and so on before birth, and the sun god came, gave her the sun, and she did put him on the river and so on, and he was denied his birthright and so on. So in many ways, Karna appears like a victim. But one should see that throughout the Mahabharata, Karna's envy is also very, very prominent as a driving quality in his nature. And that was ultimately the quality that predominated his birth, as much as envy predominated the birth of Duryodhana. So such persons can never, never appreciate the Supreme Lord nor his devotee. They cannot. There's no question. Even those who are ignorant, who have no transcendental knowledge, who have no good habits, who are covered by the lower modes of nature, can appreciate a saintly person immediately when they are not contaminated deeply by envy, when envy has not become predominant. And therefore we see that saintly people are widely appreciated even by those who are non-devotees. The non-devotees also become impressed by the qualities of saintly people. Even when in a mundane personality, some qualities of saintliness are manifest, we see the whole world recognizes. Like Gandhi, Prabhupada used to say, some call him the saint amongst politicians, some call him the politician amongst saints. Gandhi was like that, recognized, or in the modern days, Mandela is recognized by the world as a person of exalted character. And saintliness, and it is saintly to come out of jail after 27 years and to continue on a mood of, and tell your nation, let's forgive these people what they did to us, and let us learn from the mistakes, and let us carry on and maintain that. I mean, he could have said that for a few years, and then after he was in full power, he could have said, so now let's kill them all. Now it's time for you guys to get out of here. Let's nationalize the diamond mines. Let's, of course, nationalizing the diamond mines means international war. Yeah, that's obvious. So, in this way, we see saintliness. When we see saintliness in people Even today, it is recognized. It is said of the four legs of Kali, three are already destroyed. Compassion, cleanliness, what was the other one? Austerity. But truthfulness still standing. We can still appreciate people who are having saintly character can still be appreciated in this age. So in this way, a devotee can conquer in all directions. And we see that that Srila Prabhupada widely impressed people. People who were not necessarily themselves ready to surrender to Krishna, but nonetheless could accept his saintliness. And on the strength of that, gained respect for this movement. So that is an important principle in preaching this movement, that saintliness is the strength on which this movement will become respected, even by those who may not surrender, but through saintliness will gain respectability. Not by being so learned, not by such impressive temples, not by silk dhotis and silk kurtas, not by externals, but by saintliness will this movement be successful and continue into the future. Okay, that's as far as I get this morning, I think. So any questions?
How we can recognize in our character this quality of enemies?
Envy is the quality where we desire recognition for ourselves and cannot tolerate when others are being glorified more than we are. Envy is that we want to be recognized as the greatest. So this tendency is not difficult to recognize. We know that it's there. It's difficult to overcome. And so initially we cannot just immediately be free from envy, but we can try to follow Vaishnava etiquette. And Vaishnava etiquette is designed to make us act in a non-envious behavior. Even when we are still having envy within the heart, we learn to be respectful. We learn to give due respect and to, we accept superiors according to Vaishnava etiquette. See, it's like in modern society, everyone's equal. Right? Don't think you're any better than I am. You know what I mean? That's very deeply rooted, right? Who are you to think you're any better than I am? That's very much the modern culture based on envy. But actually, Vaishnava culture accepts superiors and offers respects to superiors. And various superiors are there. Elders are to be respected. Parents are to be respected. spiritual personalities such as Brahmanas are to be respected. Spiritual teachers are to be respected. Sannyasis are to be ashram. So ashram issues. Going to ashram, respect is given. And in our movement, initiation is respected. And service is respected. Like seniority, there is seniority by initiation, and that's always there, always to be respected. And there's seniority by service, and that is also to be respected. So in this way, if we see that someone has done a service for a long time, that is to be respected. We should understand Krishna respects. Someone does some service for a little while, oh, Krishna is very nice. Someone does service for many years, oh, Krishna is more impressed. So one must always remember, how is Krishna looking upon this person? Not how am I looking upon this person, but how is Krishna looking upon this person? We may see this person, his nature is not very nice. Yes? Yes. I see something in his character that is a little strange, some flaw, some defect. Krishna is seeing all, he's done such nice service. Krishna is smiling. So when you look at that person, see Krishna behind him smiling. In that way, we can overcome him. Because it's scary, to be envious in front of Krishna. Would you dare? I wouldn't dare so much. But that's what we do. So when we get envious of the devotees, we are in big trouble.
Speaking about this, four legs of karma, truthfulness, to mention that age, but I don't really understand how, because truthfulness also seems to be completely gone. Then you put it on an angle of that it is still respect, but
yeah.
On the other hand, cleanliness, and honesty, and cleanliness, and like the other qualities, compassion is respect.
Well, the way Prabhupada explains it, he says truthfulness is still standing because there is still an interest in the absolute truth. There is still a class of people. It's still alive somewhere. It's still above the surface, that there is still in the world interest in the absolute truth. Not that people are otherwise truthful. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, according to that same statement, then, that the other three legs are not there, then we should actually consider that cleanliness, austerity, and compassion are not really there. We don't know what cleanliness is anymore. Yeah. It's gone. Nobody knows. Everything's contaminated. Only in Vedic culture, but you can see it's a whole other concept of cleanliness, internal. So that's gone, that culture. So is the statement. So if you want to argue it, I'm saying from argument, possible. But whatever cleanliness, whatever compassion, whatever austerity we see, it's superficial. That's what it means. Which I think is reasonable. No? Not reasonable. Question.
No, it is reasonable, but the same. I don't see the difference of the truthfulness.
Well, the truthfulness has to do with the absolute truth. There is still interest in the absolute truth.
But it's also artificial.
It's superficial. No, there is still genuine interest in the absolute truth, in the Lord. There is. There's still people taking to the absolute truth, still genuinely looking for the truth. It's still alive. And that's not my answer, that's Prabhupada's answer. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.